the sun has not yet fully risen over Deutz in the east on the other side of the Rhine, as seen from Cologne. The first rays of sunshine of the day cast long shadows on the abbey and St. Heribert's church there. A light mist still wafts across the Rhine, even between the ships moored here on the bank. It is a cool spring day, sometime in the 13th century in Cologne. With 40,000 inhabitants, it is the largest city in medieval Germany. A city full of people such as traders, merchants, craftsmen, clergymen, and of course, beggars. Despite the early morning, the harbor in Cologne already has come to life. Wooden carts rumble along the paths and can be clearly heard between the narrow houses of the neighborhood. A merchant from Bruges curses noticeably as he has to unload his entire ship full of Flemish cloth in accordance with the Cologne staple right and offer it for sale in Cologne for 3 days. He is already well behind schedule on his journey up the Rhine to Koblenz. But it's no use. A customs officer is already shouting at him, "Hey, you there! Unload, declare the load, pay the fees, otherwise you'll get a fine." Since 1259, the right to stack cargo in Cologne has been a documented right of the city. Every merchant, whether by sea or land, must stop in Cologne for 3 days, unload his or her goods, pay fees for them, and grant Cologne residents the right of first refusal. Cologne was not the only place in the Middle Ages to have such staple rights. However, due to its geographical location on Europe's waterway, the waterway of Europe, the Rhine, and the size of the city, Cologne knew how to implement and enforce this right. The Rhine also becomes shallower south of Cologne, which means that ships are needed to transship into other ships here anyway, a huge locational advantage. It made the largest city in the empire enormously wealthy and prosperous. In addition to the large flow of pilgrims into the city, to all the numerous churches and relics, and its own domestic production and trade. Of course, this prosperity was unevenly distributed among the people of Cologne. Jacob, a merchant from Cologne, has been looking northwards along the Rhine for a week, as he has every day early in the morning. Would the expected ship from Gdansk with amber and saltfish, in which he had invested so much, finally arrive today? There was still no sign of this ship coming from Poland this morning. Jacob would come round again in the afternoon. Maybe today was his lucky day. The first fishwives are already starting to process the sea fish that has just been caught and delivered from the North Sea. Stockfish, herring, plaice and kippers. They cut, preserve and, of course, trade them at the fish market, which is located right by the harbor. A fishwife briefly looks up from her work and looks out over the Rhine River and sees the first load of stones coming on board from Drachenfels mountain to take them to the cathedral building site. Although unfinished, the Gothic building already towers visibly over the city. And yet, it will still take around 600 years to complete. And with that, welcome back to the History of Cologne, a podcast about the history of the city of Cologne that will also take, I think, over 600 years to complete. The city's history is already 2,000 years old and can also be seen as a microcosm of European history. In this podcast, you can listen as the city grows from the Romans up until our present time. Cologne's wealth in the Middle Ages was based on three pillars: its own local economy, the wealth of relics and churches, which brought numerous pilgrims to the city, and trade. Cologne was in an ideal location for trade. The Rhine flows from the northern foothills of the Alps. In the neighborhood of the rich northern Italian cities such as Venice, Milan, and Florence, northwards past Cologne, through Flanders, the large Flemish cities such as Bruges, Ghent, Lille, Ypern, and Troyes can be reached either directly by tributaries or by coastal location via the Rhine River, and were simply the richest region in Christian Europe in the High Middle Ages, far ahead of other regions. And the Rhine River didn't really end there. Sure, it flows into the North Sea after Flanders and Holland, so into the open sea, but the mouth of the Rhine points directly to an opposite estuary, that of the Thames. The English Channel in between is more or less just the large bathtub between the two rivers. And Cologne lies right in the center of this lucrative trade route, back then and now. In the High Middle Ages, no other German city had such good trade relations with England as Cologne. Remember the German-Rome controversy a few episodes earlier, where this clearly came to the fore. But even a few years earlier, in 1194, it was above all the Archbishop of Cologne who ensured that the imprisoned English king Richard Lionheart was released by the emperor. On his release, Richard the Lionheart passed through Cologne. An escort of Cologne citizens, including the Archbishop himself, secured his further journey home to Antwerp. That's what you call loyalty to the Alliance. In London and many other cities, Cologne merchants sold textiles and, above all, Rhine wine. The Cologne merchants bought it in the wine-growing regions of the Middle Rhine Valley and brought it all the way to England. England, still thoroughly Catholic at the time, gladly accepted the tasty Rhine wine for culinary pleasure, but also, of course, because it was used liturgically during communion in church services. Cologne merchants had an extensive trading network. They had branches in Barcelona, Florence, Siena, Bologna, Lübeck, and Gdansk. Everything that could be sold over long distances was traded by them. Cloth, leather, Rhine wine, of course, metals, and armaments. And you can understand the latter quite literally. Armor, harnesses, and swords, for example. Cologne's armorers and their products were in great demand. The city's textile sector was a major economic sector. In the late Middle Ages, this would also be reflected in historical events in the city's political history. Every fifth inhabitant of Cologne worked with textiles in some kind of way, whether as a weaver, walker, hatter, dyer, silk spinner, only women, by the way, tanner, or tailor. The trades were organized in guilds. A guild was an association of craftsmen or merchants in a particular trade. For example, the powerful Weavers Guild in Cologne. The aim was to protect common interests, ensure quality, and regulate economic competition. If you wanted to become a weaver, you had to be a member of the Weavers Guild first. Otherwise, you were not allowed to be a weaver. Freedom of occupation in Cologne at the time, or at all in Europe in the Middle Ages, not a chance. The hierarchy of trades included the apprentice, the journeyman, and the master craftsman. Only masters were authorized to work independently and train apprentices. The guilds established precise regulations that governed working methods, permitted materials, and pricing. This prevented bungling, fraud, and ruinous competitions. However, the guilds did not function exclusively as professional organizations. They also provided for their members in the event of illness, death, or old age. Disputes within the guilds were often settled independently by guild courts. Guild masters were elected among themselves to head the guild. In a city like Cologne, whose economy was largely characterized by trade and crafts, the craft guilds increasingly demanded political influence. Until then, the merchants' guilds had dominated and left no room for the craft guilds. A dissatisfaction within the Cologne citizenry, which Archbishop Konrad von Hochstaden had capitalized on in the recent past. In addition to their function as a cartel, trade association, and social security organization, the guilds also had a religious component. They also saw themselves as a Christian brotherhood, appearing as a united faithful troop on public holidays, organizing their own processions, or attending church services together. Unfortunately, this also meant that non-Christians, such as the Jews in the town, were not allowed to join a guild. This also meant that Jews were excluded from most trades, like in all of Christian Europe. Unlike in the early Middle Ages, they were now largely relegated to the role of money chargers and bankers. They were only allowed to practice trades within the Jewish quarter or their community. The production of its own high-quality products had made Cologne rich and prosperous in the Middle Ages. However, the right to stack goods, or staple goods, which the city had held since 1259, added to this. Having to unload almost all goods in the city for several days was a thing. In addition, city officials also checked the quality of the unloaded goods. It didn't matter whether they were destined for sale locally here in Cologne or only for onward transport. Didn't matter. Everything was weighed, checked, tasted, or tested. For a fee, of course. A tolerable business for the city. and then almost every unloaded item could also be bought by Cologne residents. Imagine that nowadays you have a truck full of TV sets and you want to drive from Bonn to Düsseldorf these days. The truck would inevitably pass Cologne on the way. Nowadays, it would have left the city behind within 20 minutes via the highway. If we still had staple riots, however, this truck would have to leave the highway from the southern Cologne district of Godorf and unload its TV sets there. It would only be allowed to drive on to Düsseldorf after 3 days. Whether it would then still have all the appliances intended for Düsseldorf would be questionable. Perhaps the people of Cologne would have already snapped up all the TV sets by then, and people in Düsseldorf would not be able to watch TV. Just as Egypt still needs the Nile River today, the same applies to Cologne with the Rhine River. Cologne on the Rhine. That's not just a description of a place. The Great River makes Cologne, which lies hundreds of kilometers inland, practically a seaport. More than once, a whale has even strayed here. The Rhine River is the city's lifeline, then and now. If I had a time machine, I would love to visit Cologne's harbor in the Middle Ages, where today are mostly car-free streets, cafes, restaurants, and bars with meadows to relax in and the Rhine promenade to stroll along. This was the economic heart of Cologne in the Middle Ages and well into recent times. This would give us a completely different picture if we were here in the 13th century. There are no detailed city views of Cologne from the 13th century. Generally speaking, nothing like this existed at that time at all, but the city view by Anton Wunsam from the 16th century also shows us a picture that certainly applies to our time here in the podcast in the 13th century. Moorings at the shore in Cologne were almost always scarce. Don't forget, every ship on the Rhine has to stop in Cologne for 3 days due to the staple riots. Oberländer and Dutch ships are moored close together here. I told you what that is a few episodes ago. On the one hand, ships that were suitable for the shallower section of the Rhine south of Cologne, and on the other hand, ships that could even sail on open sea with their bulbous hulls. Crates and barrels were unloaded from these without stopping. Harbor workers carried crates and barrels from the ship or loaded them again in reverse. Heavier goods are moved with a large wooden crane whose hauling ropes are moved by a human-height treadwheel. Like a hamster wheel, a person moves in it and can use it to move the crane. Incidentally, passing ships are not allowed to unload themselves. Only the Cologne harbor workers are allowed to do this. In this way, the city wants to ensure that nothing escapes the staple riot. Of course, this service is not free of charge for passing traders. And while the goods had to be offered for sale in Cologne for 3 days, they were taken usually to specially created municipal warehouses in the harbor area. And yes, that also cost money. That's also where the sales took place. What an atmosphere it must have been. The wooden creaking of the cranes and its ropes, the walking over wooden walkways and the wooden planks of the ship, the neighing of horses, the shouting of the workers, the water of the Rhine splashing against the moored ships. You can hear a barrel fall to the ground and thud as a worker loses his footing. A customs clerk makes a note of what the customs officer calls out to him. Rowers who are just casting off from the shore with all their might, the church bell of Great St. Martin, the dominant building in the harbor district. Two fishwives in the neighboring fish market fighting for a place. Mühlengasse, so Miller's Alley, is a street that led directly from the former Roman town into the narrow, dense harbor district. This is where the patrician family, the Wise, had their ancestral seat and often called themselves von der Mühlengasse, so from the Mill's Alley, due to its prominent location. In the meantime, however, most of them had moved away from the street to more splendid houses outside the harbor district here in the late 13th century. But that's not what we need to worry about for this episode. The name of the street, however, does. In the Middle Ages, streets and squares were often named after their function, like the fish market, for example. If this was Mühlengasse, so Mill's Alley, where was the mill located here? Today, but even back then, you wouldn't see a single mill in the street. But Mühlengasse leads to mills, which are not on land, but in the water. From today's perspective, This is certainly strange to our eyes, but for almost 1,000 years, it was a normal sight in Cologne. Mills anchored on floating platforms in the middle of the Rhine. They were in use there from the Middle Ages up until the 19th century, only replaced when the first industrial mills appeared in Cologne. The Rhine mills utilized a natural current of the Rhine River to move the millstones. Space in Cologne was limited, and so they were put in the water. They were like small islands in the Rhine, and even had timbered wooden houses where the workers ground the flour, but also slept, lived, and ate. It was a small microcosm in an environment that was actually a bit hostile to human life. There was always the danger that the mill could come loose despite being anchored. Of course, greater damage came from passing ships that could ram the mills in the middle of the river. High water and low water also made the work dangerous. But without these mills, it was almost impossible to feed the town. Personally, I think it's cute that they had names, some of which were only handed down from later centuries, like Ludwig or Kono, for example, were names of them. On some days of the year, a great spectacle took place on the Rhine and in the harbor of Cologne, something that also attracted Cologne residents from other parts of the city to the banks. It was a day when no ship was allowed to sail on the Rhine in Cologne at all. That was the case when a wooden raft passed by. But not the kind of raft you build as a child, no, one that was designed to supply entire cities with wood. Up to 200 meters long and 50 meters wide, countless tree trunks had been tied together in several layers to make it the size of modern ferries. The Middle Ages and far beyond were greedy for wood. Wood was needed for everything, for building, heating, for agriculture, for war, or to make ships and tools. We still have a growth spurt here at the end of the High Middle Ages, so the wood comes from further and further up the Rhine because the forests are disappearing. All the way to the Black Forest now they go. What impressed me, there were up to several hundred men on these rafts, steering these huge rafts with muscle power and great skill, and they had built huts on the raft itself, a floating village in other words. A giant raft made of wood, this was also something quite normal on the Rhine until very recently. There were wooden rafts on the Rhine until the 20th century. You can imagine how exhausting it was to build such a raft from all the tree trunks, tying all the tree trunks together and so on. But it didn't help, even that they were so big and large, because when such a raft reached Cologne, it was also subject to the staple right. The wooden raft had to be loaded in Cologne, it had to be dismantled, and the wood offered for sale for 3 days. And after those 3 days, it was allowed to be tied together again and could move on the journey. What a hard labor for those poor workers. But it's not just the banks of the Rhine themselves that are buzzing with economic life. The alleyways and streets around it are also full of life. Craftsmen work in small stalls directly in front of their outdoor shops and at the same time offer their manufacturers goods for sale. Since, as I said, most trades are organized in guilds, a trade is usually concentrated in one place or on one street. The fishwives are at the fish market. At Buttermarkt, the butter makers are located at. Salzgasse, the salt merchants. They sold salt for the neighboring fish market, which was used to preserve the fish for a long time. The baskets for the fish, mostly herrings from the North Sea, were woven in the parallel Lindgasse. Once they had been packed in salt, barrels were fetched from the Fassbindergasse, where barrels were made, or in crates, where the crate makers, also known as Kester, built them in the street Unter Kester. Once the fish had been processed, salted and packed in a crate or barrel, it was returned to the fish market, where it was sold in the fish department stores. Here too, it can be said that this medieval economic life in Cologne continued long into recent times, where today tourists walk through the narrow alleyways of the old town mentioned here. Around 1900, still, there was lively craft activity. At that time, baskets made from lime bast were still being made and sold in Lindgasse, which means in English, Lime Alley. Well, the afternoon is now dawning. Jacob has hurried back to the harbor district. He's still waiting for his ship from Gdansk, whose cargo he hopes will bring him great profits. The merchant skillfully climbs up two crates to get a better view of the Rhine River in the distance. And, indeed, there in the distance, at the height of St. Cunibert Church to the north of him, he sees his ship approaching. So, it had arrived after all, albeit a little late. The merchant from Bruges was also strolling through the harbour this afternoon on his way to a wine tavern. He had been so upset this morning about the forced stop in this far too large German city, but then everything had turned out differently. A rich man from Cologne had been completely enraptured by his wares and had quoted far too high a price when bargaining, and made the merchant from Bruges a fortune in the process. The man from Bruges wouldn't even have made more money in Koblenz. Completely enraptured, he had then visited the unfinished cathedral construction site and seen the choir of the Gothic building shooting up to dizzying heights. What a magnificent church that would become with its golden shrine inside of it. What a pity he wouldn't live to see it. Well, maybe, he thought, his grandchildren would see the finished cathedral. Well, I, Willem, the host of this podcast, unfortunately have to disappoint him. As I said in the intro, that would take another 600 years. Satisfied, the Flemish merchant returned to the wine bar that had been recommended to him. Better to leave him alone with his bliss. And so, a day in Cologne's harbour district in the Middle Ages slowly came to an end. I used eine kleine illustrierte Wirtschaftsgeschichte der Stadt Köln von Uri Suenius und Christian Hillen as a literature for this podcast episode. So in English, a little illustrated economic history of the city of Cologne. Furthermore, I used Köln, Geschichte einer europäischen Stadt by Barbara and Christoph Driessen. It served me as a valuable source. So in English, Cologne, history of a European city. And last but not least, the classic Köln im Hochmittelalter, so Cologne in the High Middle Ages, by Hugo Stehkämper and Karl Dietmar. Thanks also to Horst Reinhardt for his online portal altesköln.de, so Old Cologne, where many of the historic old town streets are explained in detail in their function and history. Thanks this time to Andreas, Bernhard, Silvia, Klaus and Norbert for your donations via PayPal. Many thanks as always to my patrons. And we hear each other again in 3 weeks. You might have noticed this episode is a little bit short. I am moving right now and renovating our new home. I do this podcast in my free time. My free time is very small right now. So I hope you excuse that for the moment. But in a few episodes, in the next episode, it will be better, I promise. So thank you for listening. Recommend me further and auf Wiedersehen.